Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thanks for downloading this week's episode of the Attacking Scrum podcast, where Welsh rugby matters. We managed to track down Dan Killick, former co-host, the regular co-host of this show. And we also managed to drag him away from a family barbecue. So you should feel very, very privileged to be in Dan Killick's company for this episode. And we've got plenty of rugby to talk about too. And so starting, of course, with the two Welsh derbies, the Scarlets win over the Dragons and the Cardiff Blues win over the Ospreys at Rodney Parade. So we get our teeth stuck into all of those things. Plus, we look at some of the options for Wales when it comes to the Autumn Internationals, some of the areas of strength. We have a look at some of the crop of young Welsh centres that are coming through and who are those really excite us. And have a look at who potentially could be coming into the squad as nine, with Thomas Williams likely to miss a large amount of rugby. So all of that coming in this one. Plus, we also take a look at South Africa and what the future might be for them, and could they be getting a lot closer to the Northern Hemisphere. So all of that is to come. Hopefully you'll enjoy it. And as always, a big thanks to our sponsors at Soho Coffee Trades. If you want to get your hands on some great quality coffee, including some fantastic instant coffee, you can do that at socoffeetrades.co.uk.
Shane Williams, the lead bird, Jamie Roberts against Drew Mitchell. Mitchell gets back to make the tackle. Wales still in possession. Created by Shane Williams in midfield. Must be Lee Byrne. Williams. Shane Williams started it and finishes it.
Welcome to another episode of the Attacking Scrum podcast, and a special treat for you all as we've managed to pin down one of the most elusive men in the whole rugby podcast in space. It is, of course, the founding father of this podcast, Dan Killick. How are you, Dan?
Very good, Jed. Nice to be back on. Nice to be back. Thanks for inviting me on. Been a while.
Well, that's it. Yeah, we're working on a bit of a, I guess, a pay-as-you-play contract now, Dan, isn't it? You're in the...
Now I'm getting on a bit.
Yeah, you're in the latter stage of your career. Those Gavin Henson comparisons have come back to light once again. This is you in your last season at the Dragons, something like that.
Feels like it. No, I'm good. You well?
Yeah, good. Thank you. Lots of painting and decorating of our house, which I've been boring you with, and I'll try not to bore the listeners with, because we do have some rugby to talk about, Dan, which still has a novelty factor to it. I'm not sure how much longer it's going to have the novelty factor for. How have you found these games since we've been back?
Yeah, it's good to get rugby back underway, isn't it? But there's nothing much on them, is there? It's just nice to see. I suppose rugby back on the screens. Good to see the boys back out in the parks, and it's just nice to have the game back, isn't it? And see how the sides are faring up, really. So I've definitely enjoyed it. I'd much rather have them than not, that's for sure.
Oh yeah, 100%. It's very odd watching them without anything in the stadium, as you know. I know all the listeners will be familiar with how strange it is, and also I think if you've watched any of the football games where they've had piped in noise, things like that, it's it's just a really, you know, it's a weird time for much bigger reasons than our enjoyment of rugby. But at the same time, there is something just a little bit strange about it.
Oh, yeah, there definitely is. But I think it's important to sort of reset ourselves, isn't it? And just be, I guess, just be grateful that we've got something. We've got something. It's not, you know, it is rugby, isn't it? It's just different to what we've known. But what I have found from these games is that I knew I was missing our great game, but you don't quite realise just how much do you until you actually sit down, put the TV on and watch, you know, watch the ball being thrown around, and it's just great. It really is.
And then you start missing the way that it was. you miss having the crowds and stuff. But you know,
you do. This is, but you it. Just We're... have to try not to go there, don't you?
Yeah.
And you just reel yourself back in.
You're absolutely right. It is just much more enjoyable having some stuff on the weekend to watch. And between the two of us, we're going to do a bit of a, I guess, split the show in half, really. So I've seen both games. You have seen the Dragons Scarlets game and know absolutely nothing about the Cardiff Blues versus Ospreys game. Am I right in saying that, Dan?
You're absolutely spot on. Yeah, I'm blind coming in on that game. I've got it recorded. So after we finished up our chat here, I'll be watching the game. But
after we finished our chat, you're going to be pretending to go and watch it.
I will be watching it. I guarantee you, I will be. So yeah, I'll be analysing what you tell me.
Mate, it's an interesting one that, because I really struggle to watch a game of rugby that I know the result of. I do.
Yeah, I know. I'm sort of in the minority with this, but I can still watch the game, which is. Yeah, you've said it to me before. How on earth do you do it? But I just, yeah, I can still watch it. So, especially at the moment as well, when we've hardly had any rugby. Well, I'm literally, you can probably hear, I'm excited, really excited.
I have on occasions, you know, watched a Wales game back after a Six Nations, or, you know, like if we've beaten England or something. And I have on the odd occasions.
Oh, how many times?
Yeah, I have on the odd occasions stuck it on after getting back from the pub or something like that. But with a league game that I don't know that I've been trying to avoid the result with, I struggle if someone, usually Craig Muncy, has blown it for me. Although he's been much better behaved since I called him out on air for texting me and ruining the results. But anyway, let's crack on. We'll have a look at both of those games. We're going to start in the first half with Dragon Scarlets, which I'll be asking you the questions on. And then, presumably, given the fact that you've seen none of the game, Dan, you'll be asking me the questions on Cardiff Blues versus Ospreys in the second half.
I hope so.
And we've got some other talking points. As it would be quite fun, actually, by the way, just to ask you,
like, give the rundown on the game.
Yeah, and just, you know, just getting your getting you to try and guess what happened. But we won't do that on this occasion. Maybe we will in the future. But we have got some other talking points to have a look at as well. Obviously, there's a couple of European quarterfinals a few weeks away, which we can kind of have not an in-depth preview about, but we can certainly have a look and see how these games might affect those performances. A couple of injuries with regards to Wales selection, and I want to talk about some of the players who've impressed you over these run of fixtures, and as usual, a bit of Pro 14 bashing from me, and all the things you've come to expect from this podcast. So, right, without further ado, mate, let's get stuck into it. I suppose the major talking point of Dragons versus Scarlets has been the disallowed try from Jared Rosser. What was your take on that?
I would have given a try. Looking at that, I thought it was a harsh call. You know, Basham sort of he was on the wrong side, but I don't think he really interfered with Hardy. He made the pass, didn't he? Which was a poor pass. The release was poor. So I think the Dragons are really hard done by there on that, and there was definitely a momentum shift, wasn't it? Off the back of that, or momentum could have changed anyway with that try, where Rosser obviously outpaced quite comfortably Steph Evans. who we know isn't the quickest over, you know, over in terms of an out and out sprint, is he? But his feet and everything else are fantastic. So harsh call for me, but I could, you know, you could understand why it was made. But a tough one. What did you make of it?
I didn't think that. You see that so many times. A player's on the wrong side. If you're doing everything you can to get out of the way and he ducked, I don't know. You know, I don't know what else you can do there. Because if, for example, Hardy had thrown the ball at him, you know, like Reece Webb used to do this 3 or 4 years ago. He was very good at buying penalties. If he ducked and Hardy had thrown the ball at him, would they have given a penalty, or would the referee have said, no, you've thrown that at him? You know, do you know what I mean? So I get the feeling. I think it was a bad pass. I don't think it was a penalty. The only other contentious thing, and I've seen it from a couple of angles and I can't quite make my mind up on this, was Rosser in front of the kicker? And they haven't showed a huge amount of replays of this because they spent the whole time looking at the Basham incident, and potentially he's just a sniff in front of the kicker. But again, you know, the benefit of that generally goes to the attacker in those situations. You very rarely see one, unless it's hugely obvious. You very rarely see that get chalked off. But if I'm honest, as much as it was a momentum shifter, Dragons weren't going to win that game. I think it would have made it a more interesting spectacle after that. And it's just those things that, you know, using the TMO, I do think that you've just got to get that balance right. It's the same with football. You know, football does it even worse than rugby. But I do feel like the use of the TMO over the last 10 years has become so much more a big influence on the game. And it can kill the joy, you know, something like that. I just think where it's a very marginal decision and it's nothing clear and obvious, I'd give them the try. I know that Scarlets fans will be listening to this saying, what are you talking about? Either it's a penalty or it's not. And I do just think that that's where the laws should be there benefiting the attacking side, because we all want to see tries scored. But bigger picture, Scarlett's more experienced type five did a number on the Drags up front, and that's where the game was won and lost rather than a refereeing decision. So it's not sour grapes for me. It's just one of those where I do have a bit of frustration with TMOs kind of, you know, killing a bit of the joy of rugby, which is, you know, where we get to see tries getting scored.
Yeah, it could have made for a different game though, couldn't it, with that? You know, with that try, because of course, you know, Scarlets were, you know, you'd expect them always to win, wouldn't you, with the dominance they had up front. But something like that is a massive, massive call, so hard done by.
Yeah, a big call. I think we were hard done by, but, you know, these things happen and you've got to bounce back. I want to take a look at the two sides now, though. Dan, you've had a chance to see the Scarlets over two games. What have you made of them? Two wins from two. You can't really ask for much more than that.
Yeah, Scarlets are really impressing me. They've got enormous strength and depth. It's quite frightening, really, when you look at, you know, the players that are out at the moment that are not even featuring, and you know, they're playing the rugby they're playing at the moment. I mean, you know, Halfpenny out, Liam Williams, you know, Foxy, Patchell, Kasim Shingler, it's Rob Evans, Kruger, Thompson, the Tex in the second, right? It's just he's when he's back from his travels. The Scarlets have got a serious, serious side, and it's really exciting. Plus their coaching setup as well. I mean, Delaney, I think he speaks wonderfully, doesn't he? We've all got used to some good press conferences from the New Zealander over the last year, and he's taken on now, and he just sounds. He's just got a lovely way about him again, hasn't he? So I think the Scarlets at the moment are in a super place.
Yeah, I think the recruitment has been very good. And yeah, how many times you could pick any episode of this podcast from the past 3 years, and more than likely would be a bit from me talking about how good their recruitment has been. And I think it looks the case for the new set of players they've brought in. I thought Callum Maffoni was excellent. He was a real handful, just a wrecking ball, trying to, you know, able to make yards whenever they needed it. And also, it's looking back to those past recruits. Someone like Lewis Rawlins, I think, would be such a great player for a side like the Dragons or Cardiff, you know, a team that wants a lot more grunt in the second row. And, you know, he is essentially a second, third string player for the Scarlets. He's vital for these games. You know, he is just one of those players that is able to come in, do a job for a few games, go back, train hard. He must be an absolute delight for the coaching staff. But every time I see him play, I can't help but be impressed by him. And what grates me more is, of course, he's of Gwent stock himself. And you can't help but think that one slipped through the net a good few years ago.
He definitely slipped through the net. Yeah, he had a seriously impressive game, didn't he? I can't really remember a poor game that I've seen him involved in. And he covers a number of positions as well, doesn't he? You can slot him in the back row, you can play six. But I do like him at the second row. Really industrious, isn't he? And he's round the park. I mean, he was everywhere. And he's going to be a vital cog, isn't he, for the Scarlets throughout the campaign with the Welsh players being away. Comes across as a decent, you know, decent bloke as well, doesn't he?
You mentioned,
really impressive.
Yeah, you mentioned Steph Evans a couple of moments ago. Obviously, he was a handful yet again and grabbed himself, you know, a good few tries the week before against Cardiff Blues. Some calls there. I think it might have been Shane Williams saying that he deserves a recall for Wales. What's your thought on that?
He's playing well, isn't he, at the moment? I think there's just... He is probably quite a difficult system player. So because he likes to play off the cuff,
a difficult systems player. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So you know, Wales play a lot of their plays, and they know what they're doing in all aspects of the park. And Steph Evans is best, I think, when he's given a sort of free reign. And I think we've sort of seen that when he's played for Wales. He's tried to do what he does for the Scarlets, and you can't blame him for doing that because it's worked wonderfully well. But it just hasn't quite happened at international level. So I think if he does come back into the Welsh setup, he has to sort of change his way of playing, because I don't think Wales will. So I'm not quite sure it's as simple as just, you know, Steph Evans is playing really well. In he comes for me personally, but it's great to see him playing some top rugby again, and you can see how much he's enjoying it, because you know he's had a bit of a tough period, isn't he, where clearly he wasn't enjoying things, and he's back with a smile on his face.
The other thing to consider, of course, with the Welsh national setup is, there's a lot of strength in depth when it comes to, you know, perhaps not. Well, actually, yeah, you look at the first string, you've got Liam Williams, wherever he plays, whether it's fullback or wing. You've got Halfpenny taking up one of the back three positions. You've got Josh Adams, who I'm sure we'll talk about later, has made that shirt his own. You've got North. Then there's the likes of Hewitt and Rhys Sammet and these players who are on the periphery of the squad, and I'm sure there's a load more who I've forgotten too, but it's going to be difficult to get back in, and it's not, you know, he has had opportunities there before, so I think he's going to have to, it's going to take more, I would suggest, than just a couple of good performances. I think he's going to have to carry on the hard work and keep getting over the whitewash for many games to come, but I'm sure that's what we'll be working towards, and I very much doubt he's
going to open it. Yeah, definitely. He adds something different, doesn't he? He's a box of tricks, a live wire, difficult to contain. I just think there's so much strength and depth in wing now within the Welsh setup, which we've been, you know, if you only look back, you know, probably 2.5 years ago, we were light on the wing, weren't we? Really light. Now, all of a sudden, we've got a lot of choices, which is you know, which is fantastic to see. I mean, in the Scarlets game, I think one of the massive positives for me was how well Samson Lee went. He gave Josh Reynolds a torrid time, and you could just see how destructive a scrummager he is. He looked almost back at his best. He was round the park. He took his try, I thought, brilliantly. The way he just had a little look up, and there was no one going to stop him, was that he was going through that wall. And he had a great game for me. Great game. And he's someone that, you know, as a Welsh fan, we really need him firing, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. You talk about areas of strength and areas where we need more, well, not even just more cover, we need more options. And Tighthead is undoubtedly one of those, particularly when you look at the importance that Thomas Francis has had there for the last couple of years. You're right, we need Samson Lee playing at his best. I think that it was going to be a tough ask for Reynolds as a very young prop, who actually I think has got a again, he's fantastic around the park, I think, and he's a real athletic player.
He is, isn't he?
And
he had some good touches, didn't he? Good runs.
Absolutely, but it was going to be tough coming up against an experienced scrummager like Samson Lee. I think that it'll be good for Samson's confidence, I'm sure. And he's just going to want to have to string these performances together. But I suppose the advantage is that Wayne Pivak knows him very well, same with Steph Evans, knows him well, knows what he's capable of. And I imagine he's not going to be far from Pivak's thoughts if he keeps putting these performances in.
Yeah, there's if he can keep fit, he's a cert to be back in that squad. And I like the way that he's getting around the park more. Mm. He's actually putting in, you know, I've seen him on a number of occasions now put in a lot of tackles. He's getting, because there was certainly a time where he was scrummaging and scrummaging very well, but there was, I think, other areas of his game, like his work rate, were a little bit off. But he addressed that, and yeah, it's just for me, it's really exciting to have someone like that. That if he can stay fit, will be such an asset to us at the national level.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, let's take a look at the Dragons. It's been a draw and a defeat for them. Reasons to be positive, though, from what you've seen in those performances. Dean Ryan said before this week's game that it's largely treating them as prep for the European quarterfinal. What have you made of their performances in these two games?
I thought the Dragons against the Scarlets, they played some really good rugby, looked dangerous out wide, sort of moved the ball around nicely. I thought Tompkins was obviously a handful, wasn't he?
I think he's more than a handful, you know. He's really impressed me in these two games. Not that I needed to see much more to be convinced by him, but he offers such a threat. And half the time, and I'm sure this isn't the case, half the time it doesn't look as though he knows where he's going to go next. And that seems to confuse defenders. It doesn't look like they're playing to, whether it's for Wales, for Dragons or for Saracens, when he gets the ball, it doesn't look as though he is, that the back division are playing off a pre-prescribed playbook. It looks as though he is looking for a gap and he's going to find his way through it, or he's going to take it into contact and recycle it well. So he's been really impressive for me in those two games.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that about him. Like, it looks as if he doesn't know at times what he's going to do, but he makes it happen. That because he beats, he's deceptively strong, isn't he? Mm. I mean, because he beats the first man, almost second man as well, really, and then he seems to get his hands free, doesn't he, to get an offload or just really clean presentation. You know, he presents the ball like lengthways back, so it's quite quick for Rodri to come in. So he's, yeah, I mean, he's not going to be around a great deal, is he? But when he is, he's difficult, even though you know that he's probably going to cut in at times and he's going to run on sort of back on himself at bizarre angles, you still can't stop him. So it's a mark of how good he is. But he was, you know, he's exciting, isn't he? I thought Will Talbot-Davis at fullback did all right. I thought he was, he had quite a tidy game. We touched on Jared Rosser, but I quite like him.
I think he's a really good player. He's still a work in progress, but that raw pace is going to be an asset to the Dragons. And he knows where the try line is. He does have a habit of finishing, and
he has done that whenever
he's got an opportunity. So I think he is going to be a very valuable player for the Dragons. And we've said this before, they've got good options out wide. There's him and Hewitt, and then you've got the likes of Holmes to come in. You've got prospects like Dyer. So it is one of those areas that the Dragons do look like they've got some options.
They do. They have some really nice plays now in the backs. Quick ball. They can slow down the passing as well in the backs through Sam Davis, who I thought had a really good game. Roger Williams, you know, went well. We know he's a quality nine, don't we? So that then they're 9-10 who are going to be there for the campaign. A lot, so much is going to come around that. It's the same old stuff, isn't it, for the Dragons? If they can get that tight five tight, then they will cause sides trouble. They're dangerous out wide. I don't think any side is really going to want to give them a lot of ball out wide, because they'll cause any side trouble. I think they've got that much firepower, and they're quite unpredictable. They're quite a difficult side to read now. So and with Sam's kicking game as well, he can move people around. So backs are looking sharp, and forwards, it is, for me, a case of work in progress, really.
It is. The thing that I've been, and you know, I'm sure the Dragons bashers on Twitter have been out in force this weekend, but the thing that I've been, that has given me encouragement, is normally speaking, in a game like that, where we'd picked a very inexperienced front five, and you know, I know the scoreline isn't flattering, but for 55, 60 minutes, we were in that game, and in the past, they would have been the fixtures where we'd have been blown away early doors. So they're things that I think give me encouragement that there is the semblance of a team coming together. So that is definitely a positive. And
oh, totally. I mean, I think that if you think that the Dragons of old, to get with the set piece dominance that the Scarlets had, to get 20 points is seriously impressive. That's playing some rugby, isn't it? That's playing more than some rugby. So, and you think, you know, if Ross's try was a try, it could have been a different case. Yes, the Scarlets always should win because of the set piece they had. But there's some serious rugby being played. So I think it's exciting for the Dragons. You must be excited.
I am. Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely the most encouraging signs that I've seen there for a very long time. I think the recruitment has been good, as I've said before, and it is small steps, but playing in games like those and not getting blown away. But the acid test, I think, is going to be how we go against Bristol. Go there as massive underdogs, and I've no doubt that the bookies will make Bristol heavy favourites, and they will pick a strong side because they'll want to win. They'll want to bring some silverware home, and they'll be looking at this game thinking, well, this is a quarter final that we should win. And I'm not suggesting for one moment that the Dragons will win this, but to be in that game, that's going to be a proper indicator of where they are and how they're progressing as a side. If we can get there and give and be in the game with 10-15 minutes to go, that's when you start to see a bit of the character. So I am excited by that prospect, and he's not picked his strongest 15 in either of these two games. He's been treating them like tour games, but you know, the skeptics amongst the audience will point back to the time when I said the same thing about Jackman writing off games, saying, oh, we're just going to send players out for experience. So I think it's a different scenario to that, but the results will have to come. And I'm not suggesting that the results will need to come in that quarter final, But when it comes to next season, we can't just be talking about performances. It has to be, you know, you're winning your home games, or certainly the vast majority of them.
Yeah, and I think that squad is, you know, is good enough to win, you know, to get some good wins there, really.
Yeah, I reckon so. I think that's the case. So hopefully
that Bristol game, there'll be a lot of rugby on display there, I think. That should be a really high scoring game.
Yeah, it will do. It will. I'm sure there will be. I suppose the problem with Dragons in the last 2 weeks has been, the one clear trait has been not even looking blunt in the 22, it's been the errors, the kind of the unforced errors that have come in the, when we're in the red zone. And that's something that's going to have to change with that game if you're going to need to have any hope of getting close to Bristol. So we'll see.
But yeah, the errors and also the penalty count they've got, especially against Bristol. You know, they're going to have to make sure they don't give away any silly penalties. So they're going to have to be a massive emphasis on, you know, zero penalty across the board, boys, because you give those guys easy outs and easy front football, and it'll be even difficult than it will be on the day.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Of course, Scarlets have their own European quarterfinal to look forward to. They'll be heading out to France. What do you think of that? Have they got a real opportunity there to cause an upset? I suppose home advantage isn't quite what it was now.
No, I definitely think the Scarlets have got more than a chance of winning that game. I'm going to go for a Scarlets win in that. I think they're in a really good place. You know, some new players in there, some new coaches coming in, mm-hmm. that we know are good. You know, scrum's going to be big over there, which, you know, Samson's playing well, and so is Wyn Jones. So, you know, Ken is Ken. I mean, what a performance again. I would be targeting that for a win. Got to be a win.
Interesting. I mean, obviously, it's a side we know well, Toulon. Just to go back to that point about home advantage, do you think that this is because you're not going into the, you know, I guess your archetypal French cauldron environment, do you think that gives a much more level playing field?
Yeah, I think it's going to make it slightly less intimidating then, because the French, wasn't it? Once they get going and the crowds are on you, it's pretty powerful, isn't it? I think it does still give advantage to the home side, just in terms of familiarity. Mm. You know your own pitch, don't you, a lot better than you do anyone else's. So just that level of comfort, but certainly not having the crowd there. You know, you ask the Toulon boys whether they'd rather have the crowd there or not, they'd definitely say we'd have the crowd. So that's, I'd be playing on that. It's gonna level things out to a degree, doesn't it? Definitely.
Oh, yeah, I'd be inclined to agree with you there too. We're going to preview those games in more detail over the coming weeks, of course, but we've also got loads more rugby to talk about on this episode, including analysis of the Cardiff Blues versus Ospreys game. We're going to talk more Wales as well. We're going to have a look at the fact that the Wales 7 side has been scrapped or postponed at least, and we're going to look at the future of the Pro 14 or Pro 16, however it may end up. And all of that is coming up after this very quick break, so don't go anywhere. Right, Dan, as we were saying before the break, loads to still get our teeth stuck into. I want to start, though, with the Cardiff Blues versus Ospreys game. Or rather, you want to start with that, because you don't even know the result, do you?
I don't. Tell me who won.
After all that.
Yeah, I was thinking, what can I come up with? No, nothing was coming.
Yeah, it was a pretty comfortable Cardiff Blues win. It was 29 points to 20. They beat the Ospreys. And there was a late consolation try for the Ospreys there. But generally speaking, I think Cardiff Blues were comfortably the better side. Jason Tovey, of all people, picked up the Man of the Match award. Grabbed himself 5 penalties, 2 conversions. So, I'm sure he'll be pleased with that effort. I think they had a lot of front football, Cardiff. There was a lot of kicking, toing and throwing. And I think generally that then meant that on the opportunities when they did run it back, they had the better of the game, and the Ospreys just kept giving penalties away. So whether it was field position or points, that just made life very, very difficult, and really that stopped them kind of getting into the game at any real point. They grabbed a try just before half time, the Ospreys, and that meant that they did have a foothold in the game. But really, in the second half, I think Cardiff Blues were comfortably the better side, and a really impressive performance from their back row, I thought, which was made up of Jim Botham, Shane Lewis-Hughes and Josh Navidi, who played at 8. And I thought they did a really impressive job, in terms of ball carrying, tackling, turnovers. All 3 of them I thought were really, really impressive. And just generally an all round decent performance from Cardiff Blues, who will have wanted to put one in, given that they were... I thought they were very unimpressive against the Scarlets a week before, but that was a decent performance and a good win.
I was just looking at the squads. I liked the look of that back row on paper, but didn't quite know how it would fare up. So it's nice to hear that it went well. I mean, Shane Lewis-Hughes, I've been impressed with for a little while. He's quite a very destructive. I said that a couple of times. He's a strong carrier, isn't he?
They need that in their back row, as we've said a number of times, particularly with Nick Williams retiring. They need players who are going to be able to carry and get the ball over the gain line, and he definitely did that. I thought Navidi did an excellent job. He's such an underrated ball carrier, Navidi, because he wore 8 on his back. Both of them wore 7 on his back, and Shane Lewis-Hughes was at 6. But I think in terms of how they actually were functioning, you can kind of ignore the numbers on their back to a certain degree, but Navidi did a very good job with ball in hand too. So, yeah, I think the balance within that back row is good. I'm not sure that necessarily that Jim Botham is a 7. I would see him more as a blind side, but the balance there just seemed to work on this occasion. And it seemed more than a match for the Ospreys back row.
It's more often than not, though, isn't it, that when Navidi's involved in the back row in a position, the blend, whether it be for Wales or the Cardiff Blues, the blend just seems to work because he can do everything, can't he?
I think there's a number of reasons for that, and you've hit the nail on the head. It's because he can do everything. He looks comfortable in any of those positions. So if you're asking him to be the ball carrier, he can do it. Certainly at club level, he can be one of your main ball carriers. And if you're asking him
I think he's proven in international. His carrying. I'm so impressed with him at international level as well. And I don't think we're the same Welsh side now without him. That's how highly I rate Navidi.
I'd absolutely agree with that.
And it's we've said this a number of times, haven't we? But the rise is quite something, isn't it? So many people were saying, weren't they, excellent club player, but not sure on the international stage. And just literally, he is so important to us, isn't he? But great to hear that the back row went well then.
Yeah, I think just to wrap up on the Navidi point, you're right. When it comes to Wales, I genuinely think that he is at that back row where we've got loads of options. He's the one name that's ever present. For me, whether you're playing at 6, 7, or 8, he is the one that is definitely in the team, and you build your balance around that. you look at how they're going to best perform. But I think we've really missed him when he's not there. And you know, the same goes for Cardiff Blues. He's just such an influential player. And another strong performance.
How did the scrums fare up?
It was interesting actually, because the Ospreys started very strongly in the scrum, and then Cardiff Blues came back and had a much better time of it after a kind of initial few Ospreys dominant scrums. So yeah, it was a strange one. The referee Adam Jones as well didn't see it, not that one of course, but obviously he was didn't seem particularly keen on wanting too many restarts when it was happening. I think there was certainly a couple of occasions where the ball got to the back and he wanted them to play, or he gave a penalty because he kind of didn't want to see the reset, which, you know, I think just does make for a better game really, because no one, you know, as important as scrummaging is, no one really wants to see that much of it. But yeah, it was an interesting battle there for a while. But yeah, you mentioned in the first half the giving away penalties and how much it can cost you and how much it did to the Dragons. Well, you know, that really was what it was for the Ospreys today. I think they were, you know, they spent a lot of time offside and a lot of breakdown penalties, and Cracknell ended up in the bin at one point, and that was that's what really cost them, because they had no real field position and again a lot of errors. But the thing I would say is that it's kind of to be expected. Certain sides are going to, you know, perhaps take a little bit longer. Ospreys, yeah, they've had a torrid season. Let's make no mistake about it, and the worst season they've had in their existence. So I'm sure they'll be glad to draw a line under it. But you have got a new coaching set up there, and that will take time to have a bit of it. I suppose they would have wanted an immediate impetus, but it doesn't always work out that way.
No, absolutely. Well, yeah, I mean, with it sounds like the penalty counts and the errors, so they were high for the Dragons then, and from what you're saying, they seem to be on the higher side for the Ospreys over Cardiff Blues. And it's often, isn't it, the way that if you are put under pressure, then you're going to make errors, and in turn then an error can be seen as a penalty as well, can't it? So you know, quite often it's forced, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and that pressure builds more pressure, doesn't it? And the Cracknell yellow card was actually one of those ruck offences where he was just about on the wrong side and someone was pinning him in. I think it might have been Scott Andrews, the replacement, if memory serves me correctly. And so you could look at that and say it was harsh. He was trying to get out of there and couldn't go anywhere, but it was the accumulation. It was just offence after offence after offence, and you knew at some point that he was going to reach for his pocket, and he did. And again, that's always a sign that you're struggling in a game when you're giving away yellow cards for repeated infringements, and that's what it proved to be today. But it was it was a slightly strange game. You know, at times it was at the end of the game, it was really, really loose. You know, you had knock-ons that were turning into 40, 50 yard counter-attacks, and you had all kinds of, it seemed to really open up right towards the end of the game. And then there were other times where it was very stop and start because of the number of errors. But again, like I said, I think that's probably in no small part due to the fact that teams are still getting up to match speed, really, because you haven't played. You know, these, in a way, are your pre-season friendlies, because they're the first games back after such a long period off.
Did you enjoy the game?
Yeah, I did. I did. I didn't think it was as exciting as a Dragons game, just because I think that it felt to me like Cardiff were going to win from about half an hour in. I thought they looked much more the comfortable side, and I don't know. I would always just rather see a game that you don't necessarily know the result of. But yeah, there were certainly some enjoyable moments. And yeah, I tweeted this out, and this is probably the most obvious thing in the world anyone's ever said, but Josh Adams as a finisher is just so impressive. And I suppose you could be forgiven for thinking, you know, for him thinking, having had such a brilliant World Cup a year ago, and then, you know, continuing that form for Wales during the Six Nations, although Wales didn't have the best time of it. He you could be forgiven for saying, well, you perhaps wanting to ease himself in at Cardiff Blues, but he just looks like he wants to play all the time. And whenever he plays, he more or less scores. He's just a stunningly brilliant finisher. He's a magnificent player. I've got nothing but praise for how good he is and obviously how hard he works on his game.
Yeah, it's so dangerous, isn't he? When he gets the ball, you expect now, don't you? Expect him to do something quite special. And when you have that expectation, it can bring a lot of pressure on you, but he seems to have he keeps on delivering, doesn't he?
He does, and I think so much of it is down to the fact that he was let go as a young player. And I think he just oozes that determination, and you can tell he works so hard at his game. And the results are there in evidence. You know, he's a prime example of someone that you would show to younger players and say, this is what you have to do. You have to work as hard as Josh Adams and constantly try and improve on your game. And I think
do you think that sort of mental resilience will hold him in very,
I think,
you know,
it
very
has.
I
think that mental resilience has turned him from, you know, from a player who wasn't able to get a game and was let go, and it's turned him into one of the, you know, to a fine international winger, to someone who, if the Lions tour goes ahead next year, I fully expect him to go on it. And I wouldn't be surprised to say he's a Test Lion. I just think he's such a wonderful finisher that he's so reliable. He's great in defence, and he's, you know, the only time I've seen him have a bad game for Wales, or a bad time for Wales, was that first half against Fiji during Rugby World Cup. And he ended up having a blinder of a second half and scoring crucial tries. So, you know, that's the...
And he was up against a pretty... was it the bus, wasn't it? Or, you know, what's his nickname?
The bus, the winger, was Julian Surveyor, wasn't it? That was his nickname, the old All Blacks winger.
Oh, yeah, well, that's right, yeah. Yeah. There's not many that could... Josh Adams said there's not many that he thinks would have stopped. Who was the winger he was up against?
So it was Randranda on one wing, and it would have been possibly Tuasova. Yeah, it would have been Tuasova, I think.
Tuasova, yeah.
And there's two monstrous wingers. And,
But yeah, again, I suppose that resilience to literally not let your head go down, and for it really to rattle you. Because those things can get into your head, can't they? And just think, hang on a minute, we're going to have to pull Josh Adams off, boys. He has had it. Most wingers would fold under that pressure. And the way he just came back, it probably does all hark back to the fact that he's had a lot of knockbacks. And then, you know, suddenly he's playing second division rugby in England. And then he's come up and he's, you know, top try scorer in the Prem. And, you know, wanted by, you know, so many different clubs. So,
yeah, well, you know, the
Cinderford, wasn't it? It was Cinderford.
That's right. Yeah, it was.
He was playing for, yeah.
Yeah, I have to say that the, you know, like you just said there, that the shakiest performance he's put in a Wales shirt was a game that he scored a hat trick in. So, you know, that's a
says it all, doesn't it?
It does, really. Let's stick with Wales. Let's move on from the Cardiff game. Let's stick with Wales, because there have been a couple of injury knocks, most notably at nine, with Thomas Williams likely to be ruled out for a bit longer than we were hoping. Now, we've spoken about nine and how it's become an area of strength for Wales. Obviously, Gareth Davis has been doing it for the last couple of years. Reece Webb back in the fold now. What about that third spot now that Thomas Williams is expected to be out of the picture? There's no Alan Davis because he's ineligible playing in England. Who do you think are the contenders for that, and who would you be going for?
So I think Rodri's a contender from the Dragons. But I think Kieran Hardy is certainly someone that's got to be really looked at now. Mm-hmm. He's an impressive nine. He's quite calm on the ball, isn't he? Seems to make a number of right decisions. But it depends on the sort of balance, doesn't it, of nines, doesn't it, with because it, with that third spot, and I think we've potentially got it wrong on that third spot, you know, over the last couple of years. So, is anybody else that you think would?
I mean, to be honest, I think it's Kieran Hardy is the next cab off the rank. I think, you know, yeah. Roger Williams has done a very good job for the Dragons, but I wouldn't be in a rush to bring him back into the international setup. I think that where he's played so well for the Dragons, you kind of, I don't know, I think Hardy is, it would be the one I'd be looking at. I think his all-round game is best suited to what Wales are trying to do. And yeah, with that in mind, he'd be the one I'd be going for. I think he's put in a string of impressive performances, but yeah, he's got a lot about him. He knows where the try line is. He's an attack-minded nine, but he's also got solid service. He's quite a big chap as well. So yeah, I think he would be the one for me. I can't think of too many others that are necessarily in the running, unless you're going back to having a look at Lloyd. Because I don't know. They would be the obvious ones. Then you're into younger prospects, like some of the boys at the Ospreys. But yeah, for me, I think Hardy is comfortably the next cab off the rank.
That's one is one eye on the future as well, isn't it? I know he's not 17, 18, is he? But he's a young scrum half, and I think he'll really do wonders for him to come into the Welsh squad, and we can have a look at him and see what he can do.
Yeah, and another position that we've spoken about a number of times, and there being kind of a perceived lack of depth there, but in the long run, I'm quite excited by some of the options that Wales are going to have in the centre.
Yeah, I'm the same as you. I think Johnny Williams, he looks like a real, real decent centre, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. Quality 12. Again, something different to what we've had, and again, we've been worried about the centre options. And is it fair to say all of a sudden?
I think it is fair to say all of a sudden, to be honest, because
it does seem like all of a sudden.
Well, it does, and you've got, obviously, in the case of Johnny Williams, it is kind of all of a sudden, because he's been Welsh qualified all the time, but he was in an England squad. He might even have played a Barbarians game for England.
He did.
So yeah. I suppose that one is all of a sudden. But then you look at the Ospreys, and Kieran Williams, he came off the bench today and, you know, looked a handful, but he was certainly mighty impressive against the Dragons the week before. He's someone that I'm sure we're desperate to see a lot more of. Max Llewellyn at the Cardiff had a really good kind of 20 minutes before he went off injured, unfortunately. But he's a real prospect. Ben Thomas came on again. He's a player I really like.
Yeah, how did
he
go?
A bit quieter than I would have hoped. Certainly nothing wrong, but he's a player that you want to see catch the eye. And the more I think about it, the more I think he might be a 10.
Yeah?
Yeah, I do. I just... I don't know. I think it's just perhaps his... perhaps his build and his athleticism. He's a nice footballing centre, but I just think he could have more influence on a game at 10. I'd like to see him get the ball in hand and see what he's able to do.
He's so classy, isn't he, on the ball? Like he's one of the classiest looking players, isn't he, when he has the ball in hand. He just seems to have a lot of time on the ball, doesn't he?
Yeah. He does. We were saying this last week with Yestin that, he does. You know, when he certainly burst on the scene, whenever it was 6-7 months ago, with those first few eye-catching performances, you got the feeling that he was never rushed on the ball. And again, that just lends me to think that he could be a very good 10, and in a position where perhaps Cardiff Blues don't have that much depth. But obviously Jason Tavy trying to prove me wrong there with a man of the match performance today. But you know, those backup options behind Jarrod, that's kind of where I think his future might lie. But you know, we'll kind of see on that. But yeah, nonetheless, a lot of young prospects in particular at centre, and you've still got. I think what was kind of quite encouraging. It was nice to see a lot of Welsh combinations out there. this weekend.
Yeah. So,
you know,
and it's so different, aren't they? And,
yeah, they are, absolutely. And that's, you know, that's very much what we need. And like you say, you've still got John Fox to come back into the fold. I very much expect Halaholo to get an international cap for Wales in this next season when he's fit again. So yeah, they do seem like there's options, but it's that big step up from club to international.
Yeah, it is. But equally, you know, we need to. There's been other players, isn't there, that we've said, you know, good club players that, and not too sure whether they make international, and they, you know, they go very, very well. So the big thing for me with the, that's so exciting about the centres is the way that we've got so many different types of centres now.
Yeah.
They all offer something different, where for a number of years we've had similar-ish, they've been in a similar mould, haven't they? Now we've got the almost difficulty is going to be working out what style of centre we want to play, depending on who we're playing against, which is certainly not a bad thing to have. And I think that's also probably going to be the difficulty for Cardiff Blues, in a way, is who, you know, how they use those centres with the 10 that they go for. Because if they go for Jared, obviously it's a totally different option from Tovey, isn't it? And so
yeah,
somebody like Ben Thomas, who he's on the bench, wasn't he, coming off, it's quite difficult, isn't it, to know to just slot in. It's a lot more exciting times, isn't it, for Wales with the centre partnerships now than it certainly has been.
It is, yeah. Only one way to find out whether they're good enough or not, and there's so much rugby to be played at international level over the next year or so that I think we're likely to find out with some of these players. Sticking with international rugby to start wrapping the pod up, though, Dan, a story today doing the rounds that South Africa might be replacing Japan in this Eight Nations tournament, or whatever the hell it's going to be called, in the autumn, and I don't know whether that prospect excites you or not. What do you think about that?
I can't say it excites me. Mm. Can I say that it doesn't excite me?
Well, of course you can.
What does it do for you? I mean,
well, I've said before, I understand why this tournament's taking place, but it doesn't really. It's not a thing, is it? It's just like it's a random bunch of teams playing each other.
Yeah,
it's
it can almost be any site. You know, it doesn't. It just doesn't really have a make me go one way or the other, to be honest.
No, I think the bigger thing here. So this story was supposedly the source for it. It was Bernard Laporte. So, you know, it's come from pretty high up within rugby politics, the world rugby vice chairman. But he claimed that they were in advanced discussions with South Africa to join the competition. And I suppose the bigger thing here is where South Africa, the world champions, fit into world rugby. Are they a Northern Hemisphere side? Are they a Southern Hemisphere side? Geographically, they're Southern Hemisphere. Time-wise, they're Northern Hemisphere. The relationship with the Rugby Championship and what was Zanzibar and previously, you know, the Super Rugby relationship, well, that's pretty much come to a what seems like a bitter end. And so more and more, it looks as though they're heading north. And if they are, that means two things. One, more than likely the Super Rugby franchises, you know, the good ones, will be joining the Pro 14. And theoretically, you could see the Springboks joining the Six Nations. I mean, otherwise, where do they play? If they don't play in the Rugby Championship, which they still might, but if they don't, where would they end up? You know, what would be the option? And realistically, this tournament, this is where it kind of gets interesting, is this tournament will decide that. Because I think the Rugby Championship is earmarked for November and December. And that's, you know, you're not going to be able to play in both unless you send split squads. You send one to Rugby Championship and one to the Northern Hemisphere side, which I don't know, maybe they're actually thinking about that. But realistically, this is going to determine where they end up, I think.
Yeah, that's probably right, actually, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because if you wouldn't not play in the Rugby Championship and then play in this thing if there wasn't a route to Northern Hemisphere rugby, I don't think. So otherwise, you're gonna piss off your the size that you've played in the competition with for 20 years, on the off chance that you might join the Six Nations. I think that route has to be clear cut. Otherwise, they wouldn't be doing it. Maybe this is just a story that's being leaked to try and be a bit of a bargaining tool. But I don't know. The bigger picture for me is not whether they play. Is not about this tournament. It's about what the long term future of South Africa and in turn the Six Nations and Rugby Championship is.
And at the moment, it does seem, it does seem as if it would work very, very nicely, wouldn't it, for South Africa to come over this way?
I don't think so. I mean, personally, I think it's those South African sides are definitely going to join the Pro 14. I'm convinced of that. I think they'll bin off the two weaker sides and they'll bring in the good Super Rugby franchises, and it will become a Pro 16 again with two conferences, I think, and that is what I expect to happen. Again, doesn't excite me at all. I just think, yes, they're good sides, but it's just a meaningless competition without any identity. The Pro 14, 16, yep, whatever it is, it doesn't mean anything. And I think that would be the problem with bringing the Springboks into the Six Nations too. Realistically, this has always been a European, and I'm not saying this from any kind of a particularly nationalistic point of view. I just think that the reason the Six Nations has worked is because it's been a European tournament with a lot of history between those sides, and then you've added Italy, who were the next cab off the rank, and they were added 20 years ago. I don't see how the South Africans kind of fit into that. It doesn't make any sense. I think also it makes the Lions tours a lot more a lot less special. Again, whether or not Six Nations organisers and Springboks care about that, I don't know. I think they perhaps should, but it's not the same if you... I know they only go to South Africa once every 12 years, but it's not the same if you're playing them every single year,
Yeah, I don't... For me, I think it would... could destabilise the Six Nations, really. Mm. I think it would have a damaging effect.
Well, yeah, I think it would. It just depends on whether whether the money men think there is some opportunity within that. Obviously, with South Africa joining somewhere, it brings that market, it brings a broadcast deal with it. So I think ultimately that's what it's going to come down to. But if it were me, I would be thinking very, very carefully about that being the case. It's just the natural home for me, I think, is for South Africa in the Rugby Championship, and I think to bolster the Rugby Championship would be a good idea. I think opening that up to Japan and Fiji / a Southern Hemisphere, a Pacific Island side would be a wonderful thing. But the Six Nations just doesn't make sense to me. I think it's as if you're going to have any kind of alteration to those six sides who are already in it, it needs to be based on a meritocracy of having some kind of second tier that offers a promotion and relegation. And I'm not even convinced that's necessarily the right route, but that has to be the way if you are going to introduce new sides, in my opinion.
So you leave it alone, is it?
Well, certainly I don't think that bringing South Africa in is the right route.
What would CVC say, Jess?
Well, this is it, Dan. I think if the money is there and they're going to be looking at ways of getting back their investment, then they will be looking at that. And I think perhaps more and more, I'd thought, as you'd have heard me said a number of times, I thought perhaps the British and Irish League was going to be the route to them creating interest in a broadcast deal that's going to actually generate them some money. But perhaps that's not the play. Perhaps the route is beef up the Six Nations and use the Pro 14 as a way of bringing the Springboks closer to the Six Nations. Obviously, there is undoubtedly a draw of having the world champions in there, and the Springboks are a fantastic side. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's something that they are seriously exploring.
Yeah. Yep, I'm with you.
One side who's not going to be playing any rugby anytime soon is the Welsh Rugby Sevens side. That has been suspended, and perhaps not the biggest surprise given the financial situation. But it's a sad thing to see, isn't it? I don't watch a lot of Sevens, Dan, as you know, but what I have loved is seeing some of the Sevens players come and bolster the regions. You look at the likes of Sam Cross and Luke Morgan and Owen Jenkins at the Dragons. I think there's been some real good finds that have earned their trade on the Sevens circuit first and foremost.
Yeah, it is a sad day. I don't think it's...
I hope it's not permanent. That's what I would hope.
No, hopefully not. I mean, I don't think it's that surprising, because obviously financially we're all going to be in a very, very difficult place, aren't we? But yeah, there's been, historically, how many, so many players have come through the Sevens route, haven't they, into the 15s game. But I think it's something that has been looked at over the last 5 years, is that trying to get, more Sevens players into the 15s and not seeing them in isolation.
Mm.
Which, so there's been more and more crossover, and I think whenever there's a sort of a side that folds, for me as a genuine rugby fan, it's a sad day in itself, isn't it? But when it's at national level, and you think of how where the Sevens game is taken to, and the impact that it has around the world as well, and all these tournaments, I think Sevens is quite exciting, isn't it? It captures fans. It's another. It's quite sad because it's a different part of rugby, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it has its role. Like I say, it doesn't. It's never done a great deal for me personally, but it has its role in perhaps bringing in different audience and putting the game on a global scale. I think what's been great about Sevens is you look at the development of the likes of Fiji, are fantastic. You look at the likes of Kenya and sides like that, who've been able to flourish in that format of the game. So
it's lifted the game, isn't it? Away from just, New Zealand, England, Wales. It's brought the likes of Kenya and, getting some massive wins, and they won a couple of a tournament, haven't they? So it's, that side of it's pretty, pretty sad. The Welsh side's not going to be involved, but look, am I surprised? No. So.
No, you're absolutely
there
right.
There it is, really.
Yeah, a bit of a down point to end on, but hopefully we'll be seeing, are we going to be hearing a bit more of you in coming weeks, Dan?
Yeah, hopefully you'll give me a ring now and get me on. You managed to get me away from a barbecue today.
Oh, there we go, which is the most important thing. But
I'd eaten far too many sausages, Jed. There was, you're in your barbecue and you just think, oh, I'll just have one more. There's always a pile of sausages, isn't there, and burgers left over, because you always cook. Whoever's cooking cooks too many, and you just... I bet you must be like me.
Oh, yeah.
You just dip in and, oh, the sauce is there. Put a bit of sauce down, dip in the sausage, and then, that's, you say to yourself, that's the last one now. That is, there's no more. And then 10 minutes later, you're back over there again, this time having a burger. But you don't have the BAP. That's the thing. At this point in the, you don't have the BAP. So you think it's all right. Sausage, then a BAP. A sausage and a bit, it keeps going, doesn't it? And you feel uncomfortably full.
Yeah. No, it's, I can,
so
I go
you did
through,
me a favour.
I go through sausage chasers like no one's business, but yeah, there we go. Well, if you want to hear more of Dan Killick's dulcet tones and more of his barbecue tips, then let us know, and let us know what you think about other things as well. You can do that on Twitter at Attacking Scrum, do it on Facebook, Instagram, however you choose to want to get in touch with us. And there's no fixtures next week, but we'll be back nonetheless, previewing the European games over the next couple of weeks, and of course just keeping you up to date with all of the comings and goings of Welsh rugby. And also don't forget, if you're coming back to the pod this week or haven't been away for a while, we've got a huge number of our series called Dream 15, where I had a load of great guests come on and choose their fantasy teams, including the likes of James Hook. We had Phil Davis, Rupert Moon, Sean Connor, as well as some of the regular contributors on this show. So make sure you go and check those out as well. Well, that's it for this week, and we'll be back to chat rugby with you very, very soon.
Podcast Network.